Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. How you doing? Here till 5 a.m. Coming up a little bit later on, since we're going to talk TV now with Dan Feinberg, a little bit later on we're going to talk about a conversation that we're going to have here and then spin that off and open up the phone lines and the text lines to you guys and talk about shows that were canceled too soon and shows that you would love to see brought back. We'll have a little conversation with Dan about that as well. And our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can check us out on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Every 2 weeks, we talk with Dan Feinberg of The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. Lots of TV to talk about, so let's welcome Dan to the show. Hey, Dan.
How are you doing, Nick?
All right, man. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Good. Okay, great. Lots to talk about.
As
always. Let's first talk about this the Los Angeles riots documentaries that are out. And I just saw something on the internet that the John Ridley ABC special is shooting for what OJ Made in America did last year. They're going for Oscars as well as Emmys.
Which my understanding is, I think they're only going for Oscars and not for the Emmys.
Oh.
I could be wrong, though, because there's so much confusion, and the Motion Picture Academy made some restrictions to prevent another OJ situation. And we've talked plenty about sort of the ins and outs of why that was or wasn't appropriate.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, since this was released in two different forms, there was a 2.5-hour version that premiered theatrically and a version that was 90 minutes but aired over 2 or 3 hours on ABC. That's two different versions. So at that point, it might as well go for everything, because why not? Also, it was very good. So if they want to do that, why not?
Is it available? Can people see it like on ABC On Demand or anything like that?
I believe that the shorter version is on ABC On Demand. I don't know what the plans are for the longer version, which is really heftily lengthed, and I didn't watch it because I knew I was reviewing basically 5 LA Riots documentaries, around 8.5 hours of LA Riots docs, and so I figured, okay, if I'm reviewing the TV version of this, I'm going to review the 90-minute version rather than the 2.5-hour version, but I really kind of wanted to see the 2.5-hour version because I suspect that things I was missing from the shorter version are almost certainly going to pop up in the longer version. So
that's called Let It Fall, by the way. The John Ridley LA Riots documentary is called Let It Fall, so look for it on ABC. I completely forgot to set my DVR that night for it, and I wanted to go back and see it, so I'll check the ABC on demand when I get home to see if it's available, because I'd love to watch it. What were the ones that you ended up watching?
I watched, let me see, there was Let It Fall, which was on ABC. There was LA, what was the name of the one that was on National Geographic, which was also released theatrically. That was LA 92, and it was from the people who did Undefeated, the Oscar-winning documentary. Then there was Burn, Mother, Bleeper, Burn. I believe we can say that much of the title, that aired on Showtime. Then there was a lost footage documentary that was on Smithsonian that was the shortest of the group. And then there was a John Singleton produced one that aired on A&E, I believe. And all of the cable ones are available on demand in their different forms. The Smithsonian one was the Lost Tapes LA Riots. Let me get the names. Let It Fall, we covered, was the John Ridley one.
Right.
And yeah, so they're all available, and I don't know that I necessarily recommend that anyone dedicate the 8 or 9 hours that I spent on them. But on the other hand, I think watching a couple of them, starting probably with Let It Fall as the first one, and then probably Burn, Mother, Bleeper, Burn as my second choice of that group, I think those two would probably be my top picks, and they give slightly different enough perspectives on the LA riots that you could feel as if you got a rounded perspective of I don't know, just why this is such an important thing to remember and why it's worrisome how many people know very little about it. Mm-hmm. So I definitely encourage people to check out some of it because there are surely lessons to be learned and lessons that have great currency. And, of course, it goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway, OJ Made in America still does a better job than, frankly, any of these when it comes to dealing with race in Los Angeles between 1969 and today. So that's still the one you should watch first before all of these. But assuming that if you're a listener to our segment,
right,
you've already seen that already, then you should check out some of the other ones.
Okay, good. I'm glad you put that in the order because I'll watch the Ridley one and the Showtime one as soon as I can because I find it really fascinating. I'll never forget. Well, I think a lot of people will never forget where they were when the riots began. But I had a very unusual experience because I was at home and I watched the verdict on television. So I watched the verdict go down. And then I had to leave to go to a screening of A Midnight Clear, the Keith Gordon World War II movie, and went to go see the screening of Midnight Clear, got out, and was going to meet up some friends at a bar and walked into the bar and all the TVs were, you know, showing everything that was happening. I just thought it was really weird that I went to see A Midnight Clear while L.A. began to burn. It was just that's why I associate that memory with A Midnight Clear forever.
Huh.
It's very weird. Very weird.
Definitely it is I don't know. It's one of those pieces of history that I don't know gets discussed enough and gets remembered enough. And then we have things like Ferguson, et cetera, in the past 2 years, and people think they came out of nowhere. And, you know, if only to pay some attention. And the better of these documentaries all give historical perspective that goes before 1992 as well. So you don't just go, oh, 1992 came out of nowhere. Learn about the Watts riots, or you learn about 1965. The Showtime documentary, like OJ Made in America, does a very good job of sort of tracing African American migration out of the South in the Depression towards Los Angeles. And so it gives a lot of context and good lessons to learn, and they're also just really compelling. Now, if you watch all five of them, you find yourself watching the exact same horrifying footage over and over again, and there really has to be a limit to that. But watching a couple, it still hits hard.
Yeah, I would imagine though you must have been it must have been kind of surreal to sit through 9 hours of that stuff. I mean, because like you just said, I mean, obviously, so much of the footage that we've seen over the years would be included in each one of those documentaries, and a lot of that footage is not pleasant to watch.
Yeah, once you watch the Rodney King beating 3 or 4 times. It really doesn't lose its impact. It's still horrifying.
Yeah.
And it's still horrifying when you put it in the context of a jury watched it, listened to testimony of it, and acquitted 4 police officers in it. That's awful. But then you watch the same footage from South Central LA during these days, and you see the beating of Reginald Denny 5 different times in each documentary, and you see the same home movie footage of people in the neighborhood who were filming these things, and you see the same angles 5 times. But the interesting thing about these films for people who watch is that you kind of get different perspectives, and that allows you to read one perspective onto the next one that you watch. So the talking head from the previous documentary, suddenly you recognize him in the background of a shot in the other documentary.
Oh, wow.
I know that guy. I know his story. I know exactly what he's doing in that circumstance. I know who the guy next to him is, and I know his story. And eventually you put together a whole tapestry, and it's pretty fascinating.
Yeah. I remember, I can't remember what it was called, but I remember ABC did a news special, as they called it, about a month after the riots, where they pinpointed all the points that where like the sparks lit, I remember they had a map of LA and they were showing what was happening in different parts. I remember it being really a terrific documentary, and it aired 25 years ago, about probably around this time last year, or 25 years ago.
That's an approach that several of these take, and I would bet dollars to donuts that a lot of the footage from that documentary is popping up in 3 or 4 of these. So I definitely recommend it. Don't recommend that necessarily anyone goes as whole hog into it as I did, but most people are probably not being paid to do that, so they can pick and choose. And I do have a piece on The Hollywood Reporter where I reviewed all 5 if you sort of want a compare contrast of them.
Oh, so they're all it's all there at Hollywood Reporter.
Yep.
Okay.
Indeed.
All right. If you want to get all the details on all the LA riots 25th anniversary documentaries, you can check it out at the Hollywood Reporter, and you can read Dan's work there. But again, the top two that you would recommend would be the John Ridley one, Let It Fall, and the we can't say the title of the one on Showtime.
Indeed. The one on Showtime I know for certain is available on demand. I would guess that the Ridley one is as well, but I can't guarantee it as easily.
Okay. And we'll find out what's happening with that, like, theatrically, because it's probably going to get a theatrical release if they want the Oscars. So
I believe it already had that release. I think it came 2 weeks ago at the anniversary, and it was very well received. I think it – let's see. LA 92 definitely played at the Tribeca Film Festival. I think it's possible the Ridley one played either at that one or at a film festival at roughly the same time and got very, very positive reviews.
Okay.
I would expect it will be an Oscar contender.
Okay, great. Dan, hang on, okay?
Of course.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, and we're talking TV. We got a lot of TV to talk about. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins us every couple of weeks, and you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. All right, we'll take a break. We got the news coming up here, and then after the news, more TV talk with Dan Feinberg on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We are here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. It is Triple Play Thursday, so get those requests in. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. Triple Play Thursday, 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about TV shows that we would like to see come back and TV shows that were taken away too soon. A little bit later as well. Right now we're talking with Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter. We talk TV every couple of weeks. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And Dan, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's talk about the shows that have been renewed and the shows that have been canceled. Were you surprised by any on either side?
There are always surprises, and I think there are more surprises this year than ever before because of how, frankly, conspicuously down ratings have been for almost everything across the TV landscape this season. There are still obviously the consistent hits, you know, your Big Bang Theories and to a lesser degree lately Empire and whatnot. And there are still new hits like This Is Us, but there are things being renewed as we look ahead of the network upfronts next week, which is when the networks announce their schedules for next season, that in other seasons would have been laughed right out of town. And the math of what gets a show picked up or canceled in 2017 is completely different from what it was 5 years ago or 10 years ago. So let's see, on sort of the positive side, Fox renewed Last Man on Earth today, and I was very pleased with that because I think it's a special, weird, quirky little show that if you look at its ratings, they're just pretty awful. And it's too bad because I think that there's a larger audience for the show than is clearly watching it each week. But I'm glad that Will Forte and company will get to continue to make their very, very odd show for another season. Mm-hmm. And so I'm pleased with that. What else am I pleased by? The CW renewed iZombie today. I don't think that's a show that I think is a great show, but I think it's an entirely entertaining and fun show, and Rose McIver is a terrific lead for it. On sort of the sadder side, I think a lot of people are upset that NBC canceled Timeless, and that's a show that I don't think was a great show, but I think was definitely a fun show and better than most of the other time travel shows that were on network TV this season. So this season we had Timeless, Time After Time, to some degree Frequency, and Making History on the network side, all dealing with time travel some amount. And probably by this time next week, all four of them will be canceled. Frequency has already been canceled. Time After Time, I don't think, has been officially canceled, but it was pulled off the ABC schedule after two or three airings. So
yeah, I couldn't bring myself to watch that. We've talked about this. The movie Time After Time is one of my favorites of all time, and I just watched the commercials for it, and I wanted to throw my TV out the window. But and it's not, so no one's watching it.
Oh, it, it was gone so fast and so quickly and so easily. ABC did not put up much of a fight on that one. It was pulled off the schedule after 2 or 3 weeks. And in a different age of television, it would have been officially called canceled. In today's world, things just get put on the shelf and their fate is left uncertain until next week. It's dead. Frequency is officially canceled. Timeless is officially canceled, but the producers are looking for a new home for it. I don't know that I would necessarily be hopeful. It did not do very well, really. It definitely had fans. And I think it was somewhat dumb, but it was still a fair amount of fun in the cast, especially Abigail Spencer and Malcolm Barrett and Matt Lanter. It was a great cast, so I liked that about it an awful lot. It's dead unless someone decides to take mercy on it. The only one that I don't think has been canceled at all is Making History, and the ratings for that one have been very low. The show itself is really a mixed bag, and I don't know. I think probably Fox had 3 shows from Lord and Miller, including Last Man on Earth, and I think the fact that they renewed Last Man on Earth means that the other 2, including Son and Soren, are probably done. But again, there are weird reasons why things are getting renewed and aren't getting renewed, and why some things that would be dead under other circumstances have new life, and you can sort of cross your fingers for things. Fox canceled Pitch, which I think was sad because I liked Pitch.
I did too. I was a real big fan of that show. Yeah,
and I feel bad about that because it was different. It was notable and different, and it had a strong lead performance, and it had the support of Major League Baseball. And there was a question: would that be enough to keep it going? It was not. On the other hand, Fox renewed Gotham today. Gotham is very low rated, but on the other hand, it does fairly well internationally. It's kind of a big brand internationally, and that's the kind of thing that can help a show. And so there are all sorts of odd asterisks that get shows picked up now, involving branding, involving international marketplace, involving streaming and other stuff that just really was not part of the equation a couple of years ago, which makes it a lot harder to predict anything these days.
Tim Allen's show, Last Man Standing, canceled on ABC.
Tragic. I know you were going to miss it. I know I'm going to miss it. Once again, liberal Hollywood kills off a show after, it aired for 5 or 6 seasons. Everyone made a fair amount of money off of that show. So
yeah,
I'm not feeling too sad for Tim Allen on that one. It was pretty bad.
Another movie turned into a TV show, Taken, canceled.
No, Taken was renewed.
Oh, it was renewed?
Taken was renewed. Apparently, it is one of those shows that has a reasonable international market for it.
Okay.
And that one makes people a little sad because while I know Timeless does have vocal fans out there, I'm not sure I've actually encountered any vocal Taken fans, and I think I might be a little bit scared of them if I did. Because it's just such a mediocre show, and I understand why certain like very bad shows get kind of cult followings because you can at least have a visceral reaction to a bad show. But Taken is such a mediocre show, it did get picked up, and it had in its pocket the fact that that it was owned by NBC Universal, and so that's something that has value in today's marketplace. If the show comes from internal, if you're making it for yourself, basically, it's of more value to you, and so that's the way it goes with a lot of the stuff that is getting picked up.
Yeah. And speaking of NBC getting picked up, all of our Chicago shows got picked up?
Except for Justice.
Justice didn't.
Still unclear. I think there's a feeling that if Chicago Justice doesn't get renewed, basically the characters can just be scattered back over the other 3 shows and can pop up periodically doing court cases on those shows. So I suspect that most of the people Chicago affiliated will remain employed, even if there happen to be maybe only 3 shows instead of 4. But so 3 of them have been renewed, and Justice is currently in limbo.
Okay. Speaking of my friends being hired, is APB doing okay?
I would say, unfortunately, that one is unlikely to continue. I don't think it's been officially canceled, but I think it's probably right on the edge. It didn't do very well. It doesn't have international branding. And yeah, I would guess that one is done. I don't think it's dead, though.
Okay. And then when is there an official date when they announce the fall schedules?
They will be announced starting on this coming Sunday. I think NBC goes first, and they tend to drop their schedule on Sunday afternoon. And then NBC and Fox do their upfronts on Monday, and then ABC, CBS go the next 2 days in one order or the other, and then the CW goes on Thursday. And so by next Thursday, you'll have at least all of your fall schedules. Things used to go, there used to be mid-season schedules and all of that, but now there's just so much stuff that people know that their mid-season schedules are likely to change, and it all just becomes a big blob of programming that never ends.
Yeah, no, that it's interesting because, you know, I know that we used to have like your regular fall season and then the mid-season, and now there are premieres and new shows popping up all around the years. I mean, do they really even have an official fall season or anything like that?
The fall season still remains pretty consistent. It tends to be the Monday after the Emmys, that week in September, mid to late September, wherever that goes. And that's where, you know, you can usually count, for example, on CBS premiering most of its new shows in what is the official Nielsen premiere week. But other networks have different cycles in which they release things. The CW has traditionally held its premieres for a couple extra weeks just to avoid the onslaught from the other networks. Fox has done many, many, many different things over the years because they've had to figure out ways to avoid getting screwed up by their baseball commitments.
Right.
Some years Fox has premiered things early. They've had years where they premiered things in like mid-August, and that hasn't always worked. They've had years where they premiered half their schedule in September and then another half after baseball. These days, because TBS rather, has a lot of the baseball playoffs, Fox only has some, and so it doesn't interrupt the entire schedule. And also, Fox is on the verge of winning the season largely because of the Chicago Cubs in the World Series. So, So when it's a good World Series, Fox is very excited about having preemptions for baseball. When it's a World Series no one watches, Fox is less enthusiastic.
Yeah, and okay, all right. Listen, Dan, we're going to take a break, okay?
Sounds good.
And we're going to come back and talk more with Dan Feinberg. Got a lot of TV stuff to talk about. TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him again on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Always have a great time talking TV with Dan. We'll do more of that when we come back after this break on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 o'clock. Triple Play Thursday, one artist, three songs. Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200. Here on WGN, we're going to be talking about TV shows that were taken away too soon and TV shows that you would love to see rebooted and coming back. And we'll get actually Dan's thoughts on that a little bit later on. And also, Esmeralda and I will play another round of the old celebrity name game. That's coming up later. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. Text as well. And you can also check us out on Facebook at Nick D Show on Twitter, all that stuff. Dan Feinberg is with us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's get back to the conversation. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you much.
Okay, I have not seen last night's episode of Fargo, which I will watch as soon as I get home this morning. But I would love to talk about did you see the latest? How many have you seen?
I've seen four. I am as caught up as we are. I have the screener for next week's episode. I just haven't gotten to it yet.
Okay.
So.
Obviously, I don't ruin anything for episode four, but I'd love to talk about episode three. And in fact, you talked to the director of the third episode. And I got to say, I loved that episode so much. It could have been just a standalone episode. If you're not watching the show, you could actually kind of enjoy it as a standalone because of what they did. Also, it was a really really nice. It was really nice to see Connie Kuhn work. It was her show. You know, like she dominated it, and I thought that was great. And it also was loaded with allusions and Easter eggs to my favorite Coen Brothers movie of all time, Barton Fink. It had a ton of stuff in there that was like, if you're a geek about Barton Fink like I am, and I've seen it a million times, it's my favorite Coen Brothers movie. That was a real treat to see the kind of stuff that they threw in there about it. What did you think of that episode?
I thought it was a great episode. And last time we talked, I was still feeling, I don't want to say tepid about the new season. I was feeling less rapturously enthusiastic than I did about the first two seasons.
Yeah.
And then the third episode and fourth episode kind of locked the season in.
Okay, cool.
So I've been fully on board with these past two after maybe only being 90% on board with the first couple.
Okay, that's good. It's good to hear that the one I'm going to watch in a matter of hours has got you locked in, because I thought the first two were great. So I've been on board for all three.
No, the fourth one is very good, and it's very good in a back in Minnesota kind of way. So the third one, as you say, it's a road trip to Los Angeles. In the interview I did with John Cameron, the director, he admitted that they called it the Mike Yanagita episode after the Fargo the movie sort of detour subplot that infuriates some people and other people love it.
Yeah.
But no, it's the third episode is completely and totally a standalone, one-off, off-grid episode, whatever you want to call it, and it works wonderfully as that. But the fourth episode takes the show back into its regular terrain and works perfectly as well. So I'm very, very – and has just some wonderful moments and just some really great visual, musical, sort of intellectual conceit.
Yeah.
So I'm very pleased. But the third episode was terrific. It was full of cameos. It was full of references. It was hilarious. It was sort of sad and mournful and lost in places.
Yeah.
It was just a really great episode.
It was terrific. It was absolutely true. And I'm blanking on the actor's name who played the producer and who was also in Serious Man.
Fred Balamed.
Oh, man. That guy, he's so great, and he was great on the episode as well.
He's particularly great, and when I talked with the director, he noted that they intentionally made sure that they did not put him and Michael Stuhlbarg together,
because
then it would have been a Serious Man reunion, but that would have torn a hole in the Coen Brothers universe. No one needed that. On the other hand, he was great. Michael Stuhlbarg continues to be terrific. As you said, the third episode for Carrie Coon was amazing, and it was such a great episode timed with last weekend's episode of The Leftovers, which was also a particularly strong Carrie Coon episode. She is just having as remarkable a spring as any actor has had in recent memory, I would say. You know, you're just watching, going from one show to the other, being amazed at how good she is in everything, basically. So, she's amazing, and that was a great episode for her in L.A., and this past week was also a very fine episode for her. It was a very good episode for David Thewlis. It's a good episode. You'll enjoy it.
I can't wait. Yeah, I can't. I'm really loving it. I think it's great. And, again, that's Fargo on FX. Just really, really top-notch stuff. And if you're a fan of, I just want to, if you haven't watched the third episode yet, and you happen to be a huge fan of Barton Fink, there are so many little treats in there and little jokes that they do, that are only in there because because Barton Fink fans would probably go nuts. And I ended up kind of vocally like laughing at many, many things in the show. So, all right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back more with Dan Feinberg and TV. But we got a break here for the news. Dan is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. And again, follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, FIEN. We'll take a break for the news, and we'll talk more TV with Dan Feinberg here on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you, everybody? We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5. And my buddy and yours, the great Steve Cochran, at 6 for your morning drive. Our text and phone number is 312-981-7200. That's also the number that you call for Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. And we're going to be talking about TV shows that left us too soon, TV shows that we would like to see rebooted and come back. That'll be coming up a little bit later on. And then Esmeralda and I will play another round of Celebrity Name Game. Right now, we are talking with our good friend Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and we welcome Dan back. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you.
Last time we spoke, Hulu had aired the first three, streamed the first three episodes of The Handmaid's Tale. They have since aired two more, and last time we spoke, you told me that they were only going to air one a week, and I almost had a meltdown.
Have you recovered subsequently?
Yeah. I'm into the groove now where I can watch it once a week. And actually, you know, because of the content of this show, once a week is pretty fine. You know what I mean? it's like, all right, I can wait a week for this. You know, it's brilliant. It's amazing. I just think it's the best thing that's on right now. And you know, the superlatives that I can supply for Elizabeth Moss just goes beyond anything. She's unbelievable on this show. I just watched the fifth episode when it streamed yesterday. And my God, this show is unbelievable. How do you feel about where it's going?
Oh, it is terrific. And it's so thoughtful and considered in every frame. And the problem with watching anything after it is that almost anything you could watch inherently is going to look less.
Yeah.
It's going to look kind of haphazard and scattered. So I went from watching this week's episode to watching this week's episode of the CW's The Flash. And let me tell you, The Flash is just a kind of mediocre, occasionally fun show one way or the other. But if you watch it after something that's actually art, it looks so shoddy,
yeah,
and so poorly told and ill-considered in every way. It's just too bad. So if you're going to watch The Handmaid's Tale, make sure that the thing you watch after it is, you can watch Fargo after it, you can watch The Americans after it, you can watch Better Call Saul after it, and you can watch The Leftovers after it. I think those are the shows you can watch after Handmaid's
Tale. Here's what's funny, Dan. You know what I watched when I watched after?
What'd you watch?
Great News. It's just
that would not be something that would make Great News look good in comparison, would it?
No. It's so funny that you brought that up, because you're absolutely right. I watched Handmaid's Tale, and I'm like, because I wanted to watch something sort of light, you know, after Handmaid's Tale, because Handmaid's Tale is not light, although there are funny moments, you know, sprinkled throughout it. I watched Great News with the tornado episode. And I'm just like, what the hell? And that show is, you know, it's still on my DVR. You know, I still have one episode I'm behind on. That show has been the biggest disappointment for me, considering the talent that's involved.
I can understand that. I think that the show's pleasures are a kind of loose, messy pleasure to begin with. It's not a show that's a tight, refined, well-honed show, and so it would be even worse if you were to watch it after an episode of a show where every single frame is considered, every lighting choice, the camera placement, the focus, every performance is amazing. I mean, Alexis Bledel,
oh man,
this week's fifth episode,
God,
is just lovely, and Samira Wiley in her role has been just wonderful. And Elizabeth Moss is just, you know, she should win an Emmy for this. As long as she gets nominated, I won't freak out about anything else. You know, if she doesn't win, sometimes that just happens, whatever. But she's amazing. It's really good. And every episode that it continues to be remains impressive, because, you know, the first three episodes were all written by the series creator for TV, and they were all directed by Reed Morano, and subsequent episodes have had different writers and different directors, and so it's good to see that they can actually continue this with the American TV assembly line process to some degree, that it's not just sort of singular in its vision. It's a collective vision that's working together. It's very impressive.
It's the best thing I'm watching right now, in my opinion. And I, you know, you mentioned Alexis Bledel. I mean, if everybody, you know, just knows her as Rory Gilmore, you know, it's, I just also, there was a little bit of a giggle for me when you find out what her character's real name is in the episode, because it's Emily. And for, and I don't, I just thought that was, I don't know why, but I thought that was kind of great. So
I can see why you'd be amused. Yeah, no, it's a good show. It's just a really good show. And, you know, I listed the other shows that I think are sort of in its class right now. And so I think Better Call Saul has been at the peak of its game. I think that Fargo, the past two episodes, has been peak of its game. Leftovers has been absolutely peak of its game. You know, I feel almost kind of bad for the Americans lately because it's just been very good. And that's feeling like a letdown to people. And this week's episode of The Americans had two of the most beautiful scenes you will see on television this year. Two absolutely lovely, beautifully shot, filmed, acted scenes, wonderful music selections, and people are still going, it's moving a little slowly for me or whatever.
Yeah.
And perhaps it is, but what happens when you set expectations also are all sort of high and stuff, and it's also what happens when there's this much good TV on.
Yeah. Okay, you participated in IndieWire again. The best sitcoms that need a revival now, or is it better to let them be? We're going to be talking about not just sitcoms, but shows in general that we would love to see come back, and then shows that were taken away way too soon in the next segment when we open up the phone lines and stuff. But you chose, you cheated.
I chose to be sarcastic is what I chose.
Yeah, okay, all right. Well, tell everybody about your response to this, to that one.
My response was that almost all of the sitcoms that have been brought back have been rather colossal disappointments, and that I don't, for example, need Roseanne to come back. I don't need Will and Grace to come back. Arrested Development, as many laughs as there were in that fourth season, it was still a big disappointment.
Yeah.
Fuller House is an abomination in the eyes of the Lord.
The only one that I can think of, is One Day at a Time. That's the only one that worked for me.
Absolutely, and that's one where they brought back no one involved other than Norman Lear from the original, other than one little cameo. But you know, that's one where there's no connection, and therefore you don't compare them.
Right.
So, no, you're completely right. You know, I agree with One Day at a Time was a nifty remake. I just don't think of it as being a continuation.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, sort of a different category. I think the answers I ultimately gave were that I would be perfectly happy to see the cast of Undeclared return and just sort of pick up with the lives of those characters 15 years later. That would be a series I would watch if you could somehow get everyone involved to come back. I think probably, let's see, Jay Baruchel is available because they canceled his FX show, which was getting better, so that's too bad. But probably Charlie Hunnam's not going to be available unless King Arthur really, really bombs.
which I think is going to happen, by the way, Dan.
It seems likely. Let's see, you could get Tim Sharp back. So I think you could get a fair amount of that cast back. I would watch that, and then I said that I would want to have the classic short-lived Fox sitcom Method and Red back, and I may have been being sarcastic, but really only partially. So I am a fan of Method and Red, and I went on YouTube where the entire series is on YouTube. So
it is.
Who wants to watch Method and Red? I strongly recommend the Keith DeBeetham episode, which was written by the geniuses behind How I Met Your Mother. So. Strongly recommend Meth and Red, Keith DeBeetham, but yes. So, giving more consideration, I think I could think of other shows that I wouldn't like. You know, you could bring back Greg the Bunny now. It had a revival a couple of years ago on IFC that had some, you know, there was the War and the Ape show as well that got brought back. You could bring back Greg the Bunny with Seth Green, and you could get Sarah Silverman, you could get Eugene Levy. So, I would watch. You know, there are things I would watch, but I feel like it's a recipe for disappointment 98% of the time. And in this case, I might not be the kind of betting man who would feel like that 2% was worth going after.
Yeah, I would agree with you, because I mean, and I'm it's interesting that you brought up you talked about Arrested Development, because and how you've talked about like how some people are a little bit disappointed with this season of The Americans. Because the bar has been raised so high, but when Arrested Development, when Netflix was brought it back, I can't tell you how excited I was about it. I was beside myself, and then it was a disappointment. There was some great stuff in it, but ultimately it was a disappointment. So to avoid having one of my favorite shows be tarnished, just I guess let it be in some cases.
I just feel like more often than not, that's better, and maybe it's different for dramas as well. If David Milch ever gets around to doing that Deadwood movie, would I watch that Deadwood movie that David Milch has been promising for years? Of course I would.
Yeah.
Bring that on. And I bet you if you did only a 2-hour Deadwood movie, it probably wouldn't be, it would be probably very good. Whether it would fulfill every desire that everyone has for more Deadwood, it wouldn't. There's no way it could live up to the expectations people would place on that Deadwood movie.
No question. Yeah.
Yeah, would I watch it? Of course.
I would, too. Absolutely. We're out of time, Dan, but speaking of Deadwood really quickly, Ian McShane, are you watching American Gods?
I am, and I love Ian McShane, and I love lots of the pieces, and I love its kind of Hannibal-ness. I'm still not sold on it as an overall thing,
I would say. I like it. It's certifiably insane, and I've never read the book. I mean, the first episode, I was like, oh, my God, either you're in or you are way out on this one. I was pretty much in. So I'm watching it. I'm enjoying it. Ian McShane is amazing. I mean, well, I could watch that guy, read the phone book, and it would be great. So
it looks great as well. It's a lot of the Hannibal people doing fun Hannibal-y things.
Yeah, no question.
It's definitely worth watching, but if you're not in, you'll be out.
Oh, 15 minutes into the first episode, people were probably like, what in God's name am I watching? What's happening?
I like shows to do that. I like shows to tell you very early on if you're in or out.
Yeah, I was in the first 5 minutes, the whole massacre at the beginning with the Vikings. I was like, okay, I'm in. That's all it took for me. I don't know what the hell's going on, but I like it. So anyway, all right. Thanks, Dan, so much. And our regular 2 weeks from now, I'm off that morning, so we'll get you on the week after.
Looking forward to it as always.
All right, okay, Dan. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks.
And we'll talk to you. We'll talk to you. Whatever the what is it? June something. Oh, May 31st. It'll be May 31st, Dan.
Excellent.
Okay, we'll talk to you then. Dan Feinberg, everybody, and he's great. He's the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And also, here's what we're going to do. When we come back, we're going to talk about shows that were gone too soon and shows that you would love to see rebooted. And we want to hear from you. 312-981-7200 on 720 WGN.